Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxy, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke! Brian!
Luke Brian!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Hello and welcome to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, minus the Brian on this fine Thursday afternoon. I had to double check before I said it out loud, but it is Thursday. And in Brian's absence, I am joined by William Walter. William, how you doing this afternoon?
Yeah, I gotta say, Luke, it's a little bold for you to say this fine Thursday afternoon.
There's no sleet coming down right now.
I guess it could be worse, but
be worse.
I do want to make sure I let everybody know I spoke with Mother Nature this morning. She said she's had a very busy last couple weeks. You know, she didn't know if the Republicans would be back in charge, and then it would kind of end her control over the Earth's weather patterns. And, you know, she just basically blamed it on you. She said, you didn't give me enough notification that Will was coming on today, and I'd already started this storm, and it was going to have to play it out. So
yeah, it was kind of a late scratch for Brian. So we didn't give her enough heads up to know that you were coming on the show today to give us some gorgeous weather today. But that's okay. That's okay.
She apologized profusely, said it won't happen again.
She did. And folks, if you want to join the show, share your tangent with William and I, 844-967-2789. You are listening to Dueling Tangents across the Civic Media Network here in Madison, broadcasting live from the Solidarity Realty Studios on Madison's Near West Side for Devil Radio 92.7 FM, WTTN 1580 AM. We're also broadcasting in Waukesha on the Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Oshkosh Air Support in Oshkosh, locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids, Lake Air in Amory, and Radio from the Center in Richland Center, 844-967-2789, if you want to call or text to contribute to today's show. But William, the news of the day is our representative bodies are getting a whole lot younger when it comes to their leadership teams. Earlier today,
they're shaving longer than my entire life
off of the
leadership team.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Earlier today, U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi took to the House floor and shared that she will not be seeking re-election to House leadership for the Democratic Party this upcoming session. So she is stepping down from that leadership role at the end of this year. She will still be in Congress. She will still serve, but she is not going to be the leader of the Democratic Party in the House of Representatives. And kind of a whole clearing of house for the leadership team. Hoyer and Clyburn following suit and also stepping down. And we're getting, as you mentioned, young, I think we're losing more than my age, too, off of this average House Democratic leadership team. Currently, 82, 83, and 82 for Nancy Pelosi and the rest of her leadership team is the ages of that team. And we're going to have a new Democratic leader in the House of Representatives, it seems. I believe the official vote is still yet to come. But let's share with the people, William, who the Democratic leadership is going to be in the upcoming session.
It's looking like Hakeem Jeffries will likely take the lead. Now, he has been prepared for this for years. It was kind of a very well-known secret, let's say, because they did not do a very good job of hiding it that Hakeem Jeffries was being kind of
groomed
up for a leadership role, right?
Yeah.
As well as Catherine Clark and Pete Aguilar.
Am I
pronouncing that correctly?
Aguilar, I believe, is how it's pronounced. Pete Aguilar.
Pete Aguilar. So, as you mentioned, you know, we're going from 82, 83, 82 to 52, 59, 43. 59 is now going to be the you know, the old wily veteran in this team, despite the fact that that's almost 25 years younger than
current
their predecessor.
Team. Yes. So it's going to be pretty interesting. You're seeing a generational change of House leadership for the Democratic Party. I do find it interesting and I think noteworthy to discuss this changing of the guard. Because I, as people who listen to the show, fans of Dueling Tangents know, I am not a big fan of octogenarians being all in charge. And so the fact that we're seeing three 80-year-old or older members of the Democratic House leadership stepping down for this changing of the guard, I think is noteworthy. It's important, but it's also probably a lot easier given the fact that the Democrats lost the majority in the House of Representatives. This is not something that I believe we would have necessarily seen had the House remained in Democratic leadership, because it's a whole lot easier to be able to go into a defeat and say, okay, well, we're gonna have some change at the helm. We're gonna make these changes. Not necessarily always a clearing of the House, as we're seeing today for the Democrats in D.C., but I do think that it is noteworthy that this is happening because the Democrats lost the majority. It's a lot easier to do in the minority, because we're already, I don't know if we're seeing the same step back for the leadership in the U.S. Senate. Chuck Schumer still seems to be at the helm of the Democratic Party, and we know that there's going to be 50 Democratic senators.
Well, Chuck Schumer didn't lose, right? Like you just said.
Yeah.
Democrats retained the Senate. We joke about tribal politics all the time and how American politics have really become more like sports. And if you want to make a sports reference based on what you just said, Luke, you know, you're not going to fire the head coach and the GM after you went 10-6, well, 10-7 now with the 17th extra game, and made the playoffs and lost in the first round. Like, no, you're going to run it back. Now, if you went 4-12, that's a different story. Now, all of a sudden, everybody's head's on the chopping block. So, you know, you mentioned the octogenarians leading our government. Based on Brookings Institute numbers from 2019, pre-boomers, so 1945 or earlier, constituted only 7% of the American voting public. And that was in 2019, pre-COVID. I would wager that number is probably 4 or 5% now.
It's probably gone down, that's for sure.
Right, yet they, our entire leadership structure in American politics are all people in their late 70s and 80s. And that's not just the Democrats. You know, the Republican Party, too. Mitch McConnell is a spry 80-year-old. Granted, tortoises generally live to about 150. So
oh, gosh,
you
please,
could argue that
please.
He's young.
He's only middle-aged is what you're trying to say?
he's middle-aged at this point.
And I think it's also important to point out Chuck Schumer, only 71 years old, so not quite yet in that octogenarian. He just hit the septuagenarian level, so he's still got 9 years before I guess I really have to start criticizing him. But
oh yeah, dude, he's plenty young.
But now Mitch McConnell is I believe oldest out of any congressional leader at 80 years old. I'm curious to know if the press will ask the same questions as they're asking the Biden administration, as it may be gearing up for a re-election bid, that Mitch McConnell too old to serve as majority or minority leader when it comes to his age? Because 80, Biden's getting the questions for being around that age. I'm curious why McConnell doesn't get those same ones. So,
you know, McConnell faced his first serious challenge to his leadership
In 15 years
as well.
Yeah,
so.
15 years. And our own Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin was part of that backing against McConnell. He was backing McConnell's first challenger, serious challenger, in more than a decade in Senator Rick Scott out of Florida. So it's definitely interesting to see. Republicans are absolutely in disarray. And the Democratic Party, at least in the House of Representatives right now, we're still going to see what happens in the U.S. Senate, but the Democratic leadership team going to be looking a whole lot younger in 2023, about 30 years younger, roughly. And that is, I think it's important to discuss the fact that that is happening, and it's going to be an interesting changing of the guard. Here in the state of Wisconsin, we also have a new leader for the state Senate. State Senator Melissa Agard is going to be the Democratic minority leader for the state Senate, and kind of a changing of the guard there as well. Relatively new to the state Senate, elected for the first time to that position in 2020, and we're going to have a rounding out as well. Jeff Smith from the La Crosse area, I believe. State Senator Jeff Smith will be the assistant minority leader. Chris Larson will be the caucus chair. Is that correct? Yeah, I was going to say I lost the page in front of me. William, I appreciate you. Caucus chair there. And newly elected State Senator Diane Hesselbein is going to be rounding out that leadership team for the State Senate Democrats, who are going to be in the minority, pretty gerrymandered minority, 22-11 in the State Senate here in Wisconsin. So it's the changing of guard all around, William. What are you kind of keeping an eye on as some of the infighting for Republicans? Because that's what we're going to see next, is now the House leadership for the Democrats is set up. The House leadership team for the Republicans? Oh, this is going to be an interesting...
it's going to be great. It's going to be the Godzilla King Kong movie meme where he's like, let them fight.
See,
and
the rest of us
are sitting there like, oh, yes.
I think it's more Alien versus Predator, but King Kong versus Godzilla definitely works too.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. They're both portrayed as villains in Alien versus Predator. That might be a better analogy. But I do love the youth movement because, let's face it, the only reason that there was not a massive red wave this election cycle is because young people came out to vote. Young people recognized, like, oh, dude, we might be in some serious trouble. We're the ones who are going to have to be living on this planet for the next 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. We should have a say in how society runs around us and our part within that system. And if young people, particularly Gen Z, the 18 to 29 turnout was like 51%, I believe, which is the highest that it's been in 40 years. That is very rare for young people to vote at that high of a clip. To give you a bit of a perspective, 45 to 64, which is the highest voting turnout demographic, is at about 77% consistently. So millennials are currently the largest voting demographic in the country. And Gen Z is closing in on baby boomers very, very quickly.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about that as we get back from this next break. But folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, joined by William Walter this afternoon in Brian's absence. If you want to join the show, share your tangent, 844-967-2789. This is Dueling Tangents. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. If you want to join the show, share your tangent, 844-967-2789. You are listening across Civic Media. If you want to take us with you on the go, you can go download the Civic Media app. You can jump from station to station, see all of the stations we have constructed across the state of Wisconsin, and take us with you outside of our listening areas. You can check out the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us, as well, to learn more about those stations and the programming we offer across them. William, we are discussing the age drop for the House Democratic leadership, but then along with that, the demographic change that we are seeing. I think the leadership team for the Democrats in the House now better reflects the voting age demographic, because as you pointed out, the red wave that was not was pretty much prevented from younger voters going out in numbers that haven't been seen and in a consistent basis, and hopefully we can see them in a consistent basis. It does take several elections to be able to consider it not just a fluke but a trend, and so the House leadership team for Democrats dropping nearly three decades is a pretty good start to better reflect the voting groups that sent those Democrats to Congress. But the inverse of that is going to be Republicans do have a majority in the House of Representatives, albeit very slim. It's going to be very interesting to see how this leadership fight plays out, because I don't think it's going to be as neat and tidy as the speaker, Nancy Pelosi, making a speech, and all of the leadership team saying that they are going to remain in Congress but stepping down from those leadership roles. Do you think Kevin McCarthy's got what it takes to whip the votes and become the next speaker, or what do you think is going to happen?
You know, Kevin McCarthy has been a punching bag for a lot of conservative pundits for the past, like, 6 months, it feels like. They will take their anger out on anybody they can. They don't think that he's aggressive enough. They think he's a rhino. You know, the particularly extreme members of the House, the Marjorie Taylor Greens and Lauren Boebert, for example, have gone out of their way to say, like, we don't think he's a good enough leader. He's not capable of doing what needs to be done. I have no idea how this is going to play out. I'll be brutally honest. If their majority ends up being as slim as, you know, 1, 2, 3 seats, and, you know, the Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene group has 10, 15, 20 reps with them that are able to kind of band together, similar to what the squad has done in the past, this could get really, really interesting really quickly.
Well, we've already seen it. Last time the Republicans had control of Congress, when Paul Ryan was still speaker from 2017 to 2019, before Nancy Pelosi retook over after the 2018 midterm elections, they shut down Congress. Republicans had unified control of the presidency, the Senate, and the House. And because of members of the Freedom Caucus in the House of Representatives that would not agree to fund the government, everything shut down. That's the last thing that happened when Republicans had unified control of our government. And so this is going to be the first time since then the Senate wasn't taken back in 18. So it'll be the first time that Democrats are losing the unified trifecta of this last session. And it's going to be interesting to see what kind of alliances, I guess. I don't know what you want to call it, but there's going to have to be at some point. I think McCarthy, if he becomes speaker, is going to have such a slim majority that he's going to need to get concessions out of middle-of-the-road Democrats and the new leadership team to be able to pass things that, say, those 10, 15 members that are the outright crazies of the Republican Party, the Marjorie Taylor Greens and those the Freedom Caucus goers.
The way you tentatively said alliances, it just instantly struck me as like the early seasons of Survivor.
Like, it's gonna be interesting, because
it's a dog eat dog world in that Republican Party.
It is, and for McCarthy not to be, and I have a feeling as well, and we're gonna get a little bit more into this in the next segment, but what the agenda will be for a Republican led House of Representatives is gonna be interesting as well. But when it comes to where the rubber meets the road, where you actually have to get things done, like spending bills and making sure that the government doesn't shut down, I don't know if the Republicans can do their part without Democratic support in the House of Representatives. I don't think a Republican-only passed bill is going to be what gets done to fund the government under a McCarthy-led House of Representatives. And I don't understand how it's going to work, but it's going to be interesting to see. I don't even know if he's going to be speaker. That's going to be the other interesting part, too. So
Big question. That's the first domino to fall. And I think, too, at the end of the day, it's going to come down to the court of public opinion, right? If the vast majority of Americans blame the failure to get any type of legislation through on the Republican Party, they will start to compromise immediately, because they saw how this year's cycle went, right? They're very well aware of the shifting demographics, and to a lot of Republicans in particular, a lot of politicians in general, but I think the Republicans do a much better job of not hiding it, is that politics is a win versus loss game. Like, this is not about trying to govern effectively or efficiently. It's about our team being victorious. And the 2022 election cycle was not very victorious for the conservatives, especially in regards to what they were expecting.
We talked
about the red wave to red wedding Ben Shapiro quote. Like, you can talk about it all you want on every conservative media network in the world, it doesn't mean it's going to come to fruition.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot fewer than the 60 seat majority or 60 seat pickup that Kevin McCarthy had predicted before last Tuesday's midterm elections. So it's going to be very interesting. Folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, joined by William Walter this Thursday afternoon. In this upcoming segment, we're going to get into what the priorities will be for, regardless of who's the speaker for the Republican Party in the House of Representatives, what their agenda looks like, because it doesn't really look like what they were running on last Tuesday's midterms. If you want to join the show, share your tangent, 844-967-2789. We're going to be right back. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. Joined this afternoon, it's starting to snow, William. I don't know if you predicted that or if that's part of your doing with the weather.
And close, you know, she's been texting me nonstop, Mother Nature, that is. I'm telling you, she is very, very disappointed in herself. Essentially saying, this is all Luke's fault. If he's not going to give me enough time to prepare for this, I'm not a miracle worker. I can't bend systems to my will. It's just not how it works. I'm sorry, Luke. That's just not how it goes. Folks, I don't know who you think you are.
It was last minute scratch, but that's okay. If you want to join the show, share your tangent with us, 844-967-2789. Those lines are open for calls and texts. And William, we're discussing the speech given earlier today by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on the House floor, saying that she's stepping back from the leadership role. She's not going to be seeking the leadership in this upcoming session. There's going to be a changing of the guard of House Democrats, effectively dropping the age of the leadership team for the Democrats in the House of Representatives about 3 decades. And we're also anticipating the infighting that's going to be coming for the Republican Party, determining who the next Speaker of the House will be. And what kind of oversight they're going to do, because as you pointed out in the last segment, Republicans are much more interested in playing politics than actually governing. They want to be able to do the show trials, very similar to Benghazi and all of the votes to appeal Obamacare when they knew that they didn't have them. Things of that nature.
Get their little sound clips that Sean Hannity can play at Fox News in 10 or 15 second intervals. Oh, yeah, they're great at that.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot more like Alex Jones and InfoWars and Steve Bannon's podcast, I have a feeling, in the House of Representatives over the next 2 years compared to what we've seen ever before. And so it's interesting because Republicans around the country campaigned on issues like addressing crime, addressing inflation, and migrant caravans coming to the United States. And one thing that I haven't seen yet from the leadership team or the prospective chairs for these committees in the House of Representatives, now going to be chaired by Republicans, is anything that resembles even an outline of a plan, let alone a plan to address any of those 3 issues, William. Do you think we're going to see anything like that, or is it going to be all show trials and Hunter Biden's laptop and whatnot?
Well, Luke, it's a big plan. It's a beautiful plan. It's the best plan, some people have said. It just has not been released yet and will not be released, frankly, ever. I mean, it's the exact same thing we saw with Donald Trump, right? It's so much easier to just go on television and talk about all these big, bold things you're going to do and how you're going to change the system and how you're going to drain the swamp and whatnot, how you're going to fight inflation and how you're going to stop crime. And it's just, I don't know, it's quite literally like a television show where they're mocking politicians who go on the air. I think The Simpsons had a great episode of it like 25 years ago, making all these beautiful grand promises of how they're going to do stuff. And then when somebody asks, well, how are you going to do it? Oh, just trust me. It'll get done. It'll get done. And that's frankly laughable that so many Americans buy into this over and over again, particularly when we see that less than 24 hours after clutching the majority, House Republicans are already setting up their oversight agenda to the public. What do you think is first, Luke? Let's take a shot in the dark. What's the first thing Republicans want to tackle?
Gas prices were really a crutch of a lot for the last year. So I'm going to say addressing corporate greed in the fossil fuel companies.
Very, very close. Unfortunately, it's Hunter Biden and his laptop.
Oh, I was
which
so
I'm
close.
Sure was going to be your second guess because that has been covered on every commercial since the dawn of time. You know, they weren't talking about inflation. They weren't talking about crime. They were talking about Hunter Biden. And that's why people elect Republicans, right? Because we need to focus on things that really matter, that are affecting
the issues,
everyday
those
Americans.
Kitchen table issues, as they're sometimes referred to as, William.
Yeah, yeah. And so the Committee on Oversight and Reform released their interim staff report today, quite literally titled, "A President Compromised the Biden Family Investigation." Wow. Wow. Yeah. To be fair, people like Derek Van Orden have
come out.
Hang on. Hear me out. People like Derek Van Orden have come out and said, promises made, promises kept in regards to firing Nancy Pelosi and
she
beginning
didn't
get
the fired,
oversight
folks.
Of Hunter Biden. But that's not really the promises that their campaigns made so much as the promises that they sent out on email fundraising to
4chan,
their extremely
8chan.
Aggressive
yeah,
base.
Yeah, those Truth Social posts probably, because who's monitoring that stuff? It's a very drastically different stance of what they ran on. And now what they're planning to do, because I believe there was really only one GOP member of the House that ran on, their name is escaping me right now, that ran on impeachment and things of that nature against the Biden administration and holding Fauci accountable and things like that. Again, Fauci served under like 7 presidents, so you're just upset about him because you politicized a pandemic. But the only House GOP member that ran on that type of platform was defeated on last Tuesday. So it was not an effective campaign strategy, and it's fascinating that it is now, like you said, less than 24 hours after achieving the 218 seat majority needed to have the majority in the House of Representatives. This is what the oversight is going to look like for the next 2 years. So I think it's important to talk about, because it is going to be nonsense, and you got to point out the nonsense. You can't just act like this is part of the game or normal anymore. This is very, very comical, almost to the level that they're going to do show trials and everything that Jim Jordan, folks, is going to be most likely the chair of the Judiciary Committee in the House of Representatives. It is going to be a lot of nonsense, a lot of silly season, a lot of just chaos that the Republicans in the House of Representatives are going to try to cause over the next 2 years. But before we get to that point, before we get to January, we do have a lame duck session that is going to be interesting to keep an eye on as well, William, because yesterday we saw it was the first vote needed to overcome a 60-vote threshold in the U.S. Senate to be able to pass the Respect for Marriage Act and get it to a one step closer to a final floor vote. And yesterday that happened. 62 senators joined together.
12 Republicans.
Yeah. 12 Republicans voted to advance the Respect for Marriage Act in the U.S. Senate, which means since it was passed by the House earlier this year, I believe it needs one more 60-vote threshold in the Senate before it goes to President Biden's desk for signature.
I believe it's actually one more simple majority vote, but either way,
if somebody wants to filibuster it, then they could still filibuster, I believe. So you need the 60 votes still on that final vote, more likely than not, because I have a feeling there will be some Republican that would attempt to filibuster it.
It's going to be Ron Johnson. It's always Ron Johnson.
Notably outside of those 62 senators was Ron Johnson. He was not included in that majority that advanced the Respect for Marriage Act yesterday. And I find it fascinating because he's the unity candidate. William, I don't know if you heard or not. He's trying to end the division in the U.S. Senate, but he voted against this, that 12 of his colleagues in the Republican caucus for the Senate voted for. And so are you surprised?
So did Mitch McConnell, even though he is in an interracial marriage. So I don't know. I really don't know at this
Clarence
point.
Clarence Thomas is also in an interracial marriage and has said that Loving could be subject to be revisited by the U.S. Supreme Court. So interesting all around. But are you shocked that Senator Johnson was not supportive and was not a yay vote, even though his colleague, Senator Tammy Baldwin, our hardest working senator here in the state of Wisconsin, was the senator spearheading this effort to pass the Respect for Marriage Act?
you know, I want to sit here and be funny and say, oh, it's stunning that a unifying candidate like Ron Johnson would say that. But you can't even, like, it's so past the realm of ridiculous that it's hard for me to even satirically laugh at it, because it's just Ron Johnson being Ron Johnson. Like, it is who he is.
Oh, yeah. It's 100% par for the course.
He can make these commercials all he wants. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's par for the course for Senator Johnson. And the fact that Mitt Romney came out with a statement saying that the concessions brought by the bipartisan group of senators working to pass the Respect for Marriage Act that addressed religious liberties, that hit all of the things that Ron Johnson was using as a scapegoat for why he couldn't support it. Senator Mitt Romney of Utah voted for the bill yesterday to advance, even though, and said that all of those things were addressed. So really all of the defense mechanisms used by Senator Johnson to say, oh, this is why I can't do it. No, those have all been addressed in the Respect for Marriage Act. So I don't quite understand.
By his own colleague. It's not like the Democrats were the ones coming out and saying this. By his party's presidential nominee in the 2012 cycle came out and said this.
Yes. And so pretty much all of those arguments are just hearsay, and it's just a lot of hot air from Senator Johnson on why he's not supporting this bill. It's politics. Like you said, the Republicans like to play that rather than actually get things done, which Senator Tammy Baldwin likes to do.
If we could harness all the hot air coming from Ron Johnson, he wouldn't need three private jets to get down to his Florida mansion a week after his election.
Oh, it was the day after.
Oh, the day after. It was I'm the sorry. Day I was after. Giving him I was giving him no, a lot no, more no. credit than he deserved.
No, I don't know if he dropped off Timmy in Connecticut on his way down there, but it was the day after his reelection. He flew back down to Florida.
Luke, they'll take each of their own private jets. They don't need to share private jets. Who do you think they are? Come on.
It's not carpooling. It's not jet pooling. It's they each got their own. They take them separately.
Yeah. Why would we have this private jet if we're not going to use it?
Folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents. If you want to join the show, share your tangent. 844-967-2789. But William, yesterday signals that Congress is back. They are in this lame duck session. Is there something that you think may get passed, or is there something you're keeping an eye on that could potentially pop up in this lame duck session as well? Or what are your thoughts? Are you optimistic that anything can get done between now and the end of the year?
I think you're probably a little more optimistic than I am. I think the Democrats recognize that this might be their last shot in quite some time at getting some legitimate legislation passed. And I think that they have to recognize the impact that what they've done over the past 2 years, in particular, the student loan relief package, that motivated a lot of people, particularly young people, out to vote. As we talked about earlier in the show, young people coming out to vote saved the Democrats. When young people vote, Democrats win. I believe the age 18 to 29 demographic voted 68% in favor of Democrats. Like, the youth, they're sick of the country that they live in. I shouldn't say it that way. The youth are sick of the way they see the country moving forward, and they want to do something about it. And Democrats finally threw them a bone and said, like, all right, you know, you've been saving our butts election after election here. We're going to help you out with this. And Democrats have to recognize that unless this continues, Republicans and their complete mastery over culture war issues are going to be seeping into everybody's brains left and right as they throw money onto every airwave possible. I don't know. What do you think? What do you have faith in that we could get done in the next 2 months?
I mean, Joe Biden, anytime he's been discounted for these first 2 years of his presidency, he's shown that he can get it done. And there were bipartisan efforts that happened with infrastructure, with chip manufacturing, with guns. And so there's absolutely a chance for some, because I believe Republicans, if they want to play hardball, it would be difficult to get anything done during this lame duck session. But there's some room for potential there, because the biggest area, I think, would be the debt ceiling. I think there's some common sense Republicans that still, the same Republicans that voted for the Respect for Marriage Act in the House, the same Republicans that voted for the infrastructure bill in the House, the same Republicans that want to see things get done, may be inclined to work with Democrats during this lame duck to,
or maybe see their seat in question going forward if they don't.
Yeah, but if you want to raise the debt ceiling and remove that from a bargaining standpoint for Kevin McCarthy to hold hostage and potentially shut down the entire government because they don't concede on an impeachment hearing or something like that, I have a feeling there's some common sense Republicans out there still. And I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that the Biden administration and the current leadership in the House and Senate could maybe get something together to pass before the end of the year. But and there's some other ones that I might keeping an eye on as well. But we're going to head into a commercial break. We got one more segment left in the day. If you want to join the show, share your tangent. 844-967-2789. Joined by William Walter. You're listening to Dueling Tangents, and we'll be right back.
Order is rapidly fading, and the first one now will later be last, cause the times, they are a-changing.
Welcome back to Dueling Tangents, joined by William Walter this Thursday afternoon, and Thursday night football game going to be here in Wisconsin. The Green Bay Packers will be taking on the Tennessee Titans, and I believe the game set for 7:20 kickoff at Lambeau. It's one of those interesting dynamics, William. I don't know if you get to be classified as the Milwaukee media market still where you are, but unless you're in Milwaukee or Green Bay, you got to watch the game on Amazon Prime. So Thursday Night Football, purchased by Jeff Bezos, and has pretty strong control over who can watch it and who cannot now, with the Prime Video stream being the platform for the Thursday Night Football game tonight.
I'm just going to say the internet is your friend, Luke. The internet is your friend.
The internet is your friend.
Leave it at that.
You're not going to instruct any illicit streaming?
I do not know what you are talking about, but I do know that the internet is your friend.
Fair enough. But the Green Bay Packers are going to be playing on Thursday Night Football. Here on Civic Media, we got a show for all the Packer lovers out there, Packer Outright Opinions. Friday nights at 7 p.m., the Hafeman Bros host it. And so you can tune in tomorrow night, 7 p.m., for a recap of what happens tonight on the gridiron. It's a pretty great show. You want to go check out Packer Outright Opinions. And to learn more about that show and all the excellent shows we provide here at Civic Media, you can go to civicmedia.us. You can check out podcasts of the previous episodes. And you can find out where you can tune in for tomorrow night's Packers Outright Opinions here on Civic Media.
I got to give a shout out to Jason, who called Rudy for it a few weeks ago. Rudy had two interceptions against the Cowboys this past weekend. And Jason was saying, we have tenacious young defenders. We have guys that have made a career of special teams that, you know, put them in. What's the worst that can happen? Give them a few more snaps. They've looked good, and see what you got in them. And hey, Rudy came up to play. We wouldn't have beaten Dallas if he wasn't out there. So good call on that one, Jason.
There you go. Excellent shout out. And that is Packer Outright Opinions. You can check it out here on Civic Media, host Jason and Ben Hafeman. Are you going to be watching the game tonight? You big Packer?
Of course.
Fan? Yeah. All right.
Now, I am not in the – actually, that's – I should probably figure that out. I don't know if Washington County would put me in the Milwaukee media market to qualify for getting the game on TV.
Watching on the local channels.
Even if I did, the internet is your friend.
Yes, I have a feeling there are going to be Packer fans across the state and across the country probably that are sharing with their parents either their Amazon passwords or how to find the game tonight, because it is a Thursday Night Football game broadcast on – Amazon Prime Video. And I always just find it fascinating, William, and this is kind of a side tangent, but from the Thursday night games that I have watched so far this season, it's all Amazon companies, all the companies owned by Amazon that are also doing the ads throughout the broadcast and whatnot. So it's just like a giant...
The Amazon ecosystem, dude. It's everywhere. They're going to control the world in 15 years.
It's the Whole Foods and the Ring... I think it's Ring doorbells and just all of the Audible, I believe, presents the pregame, which is the audiobook company that Amazon purchased a few years ago.
On Twitch streaming, you've been able to watch some of the Thursday night games on Twitch as a platform, which is owned by Amazon.
There you go. So it's just the Amazon couple of hours for football this evening. The Packers are going to probably have an interesting game tonight. I don't know. I didn't get to catch Sunday's game against Dallas, but they did pull one out in overtime. I have a feeling, I don't know. The last time they played Derrick Henry, they were one of the few teams that were able to limit him either last season or the previous season. So it'll be an interesting game to watch.
I think it was 2 years ago. It was week 16 or 17.
Yeah.
Because it was the year that Tennessee finished as the one seed in the AFC as well. And they came to Lambeau in the snow. And I tell you what, I wouldn't want to tackle Derrick Henry
ever
when it's not snowing. But if it's cold and there's, you know, 12 inches of snow on the ground too, like, no, thank you. Go for it, Packers defense. You got to do it. You're getting paid for
yes,
it.
Yes.
I will sit here and watch you do it happily. Speaking of snow, do you see Buffalo? They might be getting like 70 inches of snow for Sunday's game.
In a 24-hour period. Yeah, that is going to be interesting. I have a feeling. And the crazy part there, William, Buffalo wants to build a new stadium without a roof.
Mm-hmm.
They get 70.
Oh, yeah. Some people just don't learn.
They got the chance for 70 inches of snow, and they're like, here is our $1.5 billion design for a new stadium that does not include a roof to be able to prevent 70-inch snow delays
for a game.
It's
the home field advantage, though, Luke. Can you imagine if they tried to put a roof on Lambeau? Like, it would kind of defeat the mystique of Lambeau.
Yeah, but we don't get 70 inches of snow.
You can thank me for that, actually. I was told the 70 inches was supposed to hit right now, but they found out I'd be on Devils, and so they pushed
it off. There you go.
To,
they put it back.
At the end of the week.
They put it back. All right. It'll be interesting to catch tonight's game. I think one of the other things that I'm going to be keeping an eye on for this lame duck session, William, that Congress may be able to get done between now and the end of the year while they still have unified control, the Democrats being they, is potentially the child tax credit. One of the things that did not get included in the Inflation Reduction Act passed earlier this year. I have a feeling that there may be some compromises being worked on right now. And I think that goes to a point that you made earlier with 18 to 29 year olds, the individuals and young families that are just starting out with their families, being able to better address the rising costs of childcare, because the child, I'm trying to think of the actual acronym it was the Advanced Child Tax Credit, I believe, effectively cut child poverty in half. And mm-hmm. and it was only implemented for just over a year during the American Rescue Plan. And that sunsetted, and it did not get re-included in the Inflation Reduction Act. And I'm hopeful that that is something Democrats and hopefully some Republicans can get behind, making that, say, a tax credit for an additional 2 to 5 years or permanent would be really great to see that child tax credit make a difference for young families around the
you
nation.
You think children living in poverty in the wealthiest nation in the history of our species would be an issue that most people could agree on?
Put it this way, William. You either have Republicans playing hardball and the government doesn't get funded and there's a shutdown around the holidays, or young families get a child tax credit. Which one do you think is going to be more popular with the American people? Come on, let's make it happen, Democrats.
Yeah, but what are the donors going to prefer? I'd like to give a quick shout out to Starbucks Workers United.
Yes.
Today's the Red Cup Rebellion. Over 100 Starbucks stores are on strike nationally. Remember, everybody, the working class is the engine of the American economy. We got to stay united. We're all each other has, right?
Friends don't let friends cross the picket line, folks.
Amen, brother.
That is an excellent shout out, William. Really appreciate you joining me this hour. Folks, you've been listening to Dueling Tangents. If you missed any portion of the show or you want to check out previous shows like yesterday's, where we were joined by Annalise Eicher, Dean County Board Supervisor, talking about local elections, you can go to civicmedia.us and click on the entire podcast library. Tomorrow, we're going to be joined by Hawk Sullivan, going to ask the bartender and preview the World Cup kicking off on Sunday. Thanks so much, William. We'll be back tomorrow, too. Talk to you all
peace
then.
Peace out, party people.